This is David Rovix, and you are tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m., Melbourne, Australia. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change.
Welcome to the Climate Action Radio Show, which can be heard on Community Radio 3CR in Melbourne and Skid Row in Sydney. My name is Vivian Langford, and salut Babette. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and pay tribute to the decades-long legacy of Aboriginal fights for land rights and against the destructive mining projects that are fueling climate change. In particular, we acknowledge the Wangan and Jagalingu cultural custodians and their ongoing opposition to coal mining on their lands in central Queensland, and to the Gomeroi traditional custodians' continuing opposition to coal and gas on their land in New South Wales. It is vital at this late stage in history that we all learn to care for country. It will always be Aboriginal land, and now is our time to all stand up for and protect it. Last week, the show was called From Belém to Santa Marta, and today we are on the same journey. If you missed it, you can listen to the podcast on the Climate Action Show, 3CR. You will hear Kumi Naidu in South Africa talking about the treaty organisation he leads, and their focus is on fossil fuels. We also heard Bastiaan Hassing from the Netherlands government. They are co-hosts with Columbia of a most thrilling breakthrough. It's the best thing I've heard in years. It's the Santa Marta Conference, just focused on how we can transition our global economy away from fossil fuels. You've heard all about the climate, the COP process through the United Nations, and how they end up not having any advance on phasing out fossil fuels. And everybody complains that those conferences are full of fossil fuel lobbyists, you know, arguing to prolong their business. But this conference just focuses on phasing out fossil fuels and how can we do it. Nature is doing its darndest to tell us we need to stop adding heat to the seas and skies. Just think, in the last 6 months in our own region, thousands of deaths in Indonesia. You must have seen the pictures of all those landslides caused by massive rain. And also in Sri Lanka, Thailand, Malaysia, all damage and deaths caused by cyclones Senya and Ditiran. We were probably poring over the Epstein files or the attack on Venezuela, but surely closer to home, we did notice the massive bushfires in Victoria and the record-breaking floods in Queensland. So we should be keen to hear from the brave people working on solutions. Today, we'll hear from the Colombian hosts of the Santa Marta Conference. They explained in a webinar how they wanted to gather a coalition of the willing, that is, nations, cities, and sectors of society, especially those on the front lines of extraction and climate disaster. Their one goal is to identify viable pathways and what are the key enablers for us to transition the global economy away from a dependence on coal, oil, and gas. It could be dependence on it as a source of income, as we have in Australia, or it could be a dependence on it as the main source of your energy system. So there's many problems to be discussed, but they're trying to simmer it down into many sectors being represented and then try to come out of that with something like a roadmap. The first speaker is Daniela Duran Gonzalez. She's a young woman and a very impressive speaker who made her mark at Belém. She is from the Colombian Ministry of the Environment.
We, among the many friends, have worked together for so long to finally reach a moment where we can meet with the willing governments, with the willing experts, with the willing peoples and sectors to implement the fossil fuel phase out. And this is what makes me very, very, very excited for this to be the first briefing that we from the Colombian government give to civil society friends and to people's friends that are supporting the fossil fuel phase out. So the spirit of the conference is what is possible and what do we need to make this possible? To surface and to work on the viable pathways to accelerate a fully fair and funded fossil fuel phase out. So the starting point of this conference is not to continue the discussion that we are seeing in the UNFCCC that we know is preventing us to collectively progress on whether we need or we do not need the fossil fuel phase out. We already know for the work that science has been doing, for the work that you all have been doing, for the work that peoples and the calls that indigenous peoples, people of African descent, local communities, and frontline communities are telling us is that we have one certainty, and is that if we want to achieve climate justice, if we want to achieve the climate goal that was already reinforced by the advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice, if we want to achieve human rights in a sustainable, healthy, and fair environment for us all, we need to do the fossil fuel phase out. So the starting point of the conference is not whether we need it or not. The starting point of this conference is that we need it. And what we are expecting to do in this conference is to come together with governments, with experts, with civil society, with peoples, and also with sectors to identify what are the pathways, viable, possible pathways that we need to implement this fossil fuel phase out. So this conference is a place for us to surface the enablers for that fossil fuel phase out and for us to start crafting a road for that fossil fuel phase out in a fully fair and funded manner. So it's a pleasure for Colombia, in alliance with the government of the Netherlands, to host this first international conference in Santa Marta. So here's what we're thinking for the conference. The conference will take place on April 28th and April 29th in Santa Marta. This will be a space for high-level dialogues and discussions around key topics, key enablers for this transition. We are still working on which enablers do we want to focus the discussion, the ones that are more impactful, the ones that have not been discussed widely in other processes. We know that economic issues are a key part of the enablers for that fossil fuel phase out, and we need to figure out that part of the equation. But we also know that we need to advance legal frameworks that enable us to strengthen the international cooperation and to overcome the limitations of the current climate regime. So we are expecting on the 28th and the 29th to have these high-level sessions with governments, with subnational governments, with civil society, with experts, and with peoples as well to discuss these enabling pathways for the fossil fuel phase out. The outcome of the conference that we are expecting is a report with all of these enabling pathways that we have identified that are needed to accelerate this fossil fuel phase out in these thematic lines that we are still working on with the government of the Netherlands and with the experts that are supporting us in this process. But the conference won't be only these 2 days. We are expecting to have dialogues on the previous days of the conference. So on the 27th, we are expecting to have open dialogues for civil society, for some national governments, for peoples, indigenous peoples, frontline communities, but also for workers that are at the front line of this transition, among other key dialogues that we are still trying to figure it out. So these will be open dialogues for civil society, for peoples, for workers, for some national governments to come together and discuss around these enablers that we are going to take into the high-level days on the 28th and on the 29th. And we are figuring out a process for which we expect to have all of your help and beautiful brains on how are we going to ensure continuity, and we are committed to ensure inclusivity in the 28th and 29th, and to take all of the discussions that happen in these dialogues on the 27th to the tables that we are expecting to have with ministers and other high-level people on the 28th and on the 29th, and to make sure that everyone is included. We're not expecting the 28th and the 29th to be only governments. Of course, we're expecting governments to have a key role here, but we are expecting also that this discussion brings the people that needs to be there that have contributed to identify those enablers that we need to accelerate. But we're also expecting to have another prep session that is for science and academics, and dialogues that are for science and academics that will help us set that starting point that we need to do this fossil fuel phase out because that's what science is telling us to do. So we're expecting to have a set of prep dialogues from the 25th to the 27th that are for the different sectors that will help us inform and prepare the sessions that we will have on the 28th and on the 29th. So this is the structure that we are envisioning for the conference. We are expecting to come and join us. The governments that have demonstrated the willingness to advance and to implement that fossil fuel phase out and that have expected and that have demonstrated commitment to implementing enabling pathways for that fossil fuel phase out. So we are expecting, of course, the governments that signed the Belém Declaration for transitioning away from fossil fuels at COP30, but also the governments that sign on the letter that we sent to COP presidency calling for a roadmap for transitioning away from fossil fuels, but also the governments that have demonstrated their commitment in alliances like the Beyond Oil and Gas Alliance, the Non-Fossil Fuel Proliferation Treaty, of course, which is one of the pathways, the legal pathways that we expect to be discussed in this conference as a key enabler for the international cooperation that we need and for closing the gaps that the UNFCCC have demonstrated are on the table for implementing this fossil fuel phase out. We will be having a preparatory process towards the conference, building on that. So we are expecting to do a call for submissions on the topics that we are expecting to discuss in the conference and to have some preparatory sessions and dialogues in advance of the 25th, 26th, and 27th dialogues and sessions that we are expecting to happen in Santa Marta. This is what I can share for now. I know that there are a lot of questions, and I'm really hoping that I can respond as much as I can. But please, please, please bear in mind that we are expecting to count on civil society in this conference. And we are expecting and we're doing our best for this to be as inclusive as possible. And I just want to finalize with two things that I want to mention. The first one is that we are expecting this conference to help inform the roadmap that Brazil is preparing, but we're not expecting this to be only about UNFCCC, because we know that there are things that need to happen outside UNFCCC to enable the implementation of the fossil fuel phase out. So we are expecting the outcomes in the report of the conference, of course, to serve as an input for Brazil in the roadmap, and we're looking forward to engage with them. But the conference will also probably touch on some other things that are not under the UNFCCC umbrella and that have been identified by the experts as key enablers of the fossil fuel phase out. And the second thing, and I want to close my intervention with this, is we know that there are so many topics that we would love to see in this conference. But we're expecting this to be the starting point, not the ending point of the work. And we want to focus around the key enablers that we need to unlock to implement this transition in this first conference. And we expect this to set the stage for continuing the discussions at a second conference in the Pacific and hopefully from that onwards, so we establish a platform of international cooperation to implement the fossil fuel phase out. So we acknowledge that there are so many topics that we know that everyone would love to see, but we want to focus on the key enablers at this conference that we need to implement to accelerate that fossil fuel phase out. So we focus on what is possible, what is viable, and that we focus on the implementation roads that we need to get to a more fair world to implement this fossil fuel phase out that is critical for human rights and for the future of everyone and for justice. So thank you very much. Looking forward to answer your questions as best as we can. And you know that from the Colombian government, but also from the Netherlands, we're always open to engaging conversations and to solve the questions that you might have.
The Climate Action Team would like to thank Only Just for their financial support of this program. Only Just sources high-quality, fair trade goods and gifts from artisans in over 25 developing countries, showcasing partners that use traditional skills and modern designs to create beautiful goods through ethical and sustainable practices. Discover their unique range, onlyjust.com.au, or visit their Eltham store in the Eltham Village Shopping Centre on Main Road. It's Only Just.
You are listening to the Climate Action Show and an edited version of the Belém to Santa Marta meeting. It's a discussion of the climate action community preparing for the historic Santa Marta Fossil Fuel Phase-Out Conference to be held in April. There were some questions for Daniela Duran Gonzalez. The first one was, what are the enablers?
What I can give you right now, it's a sense that we have identified that there is some key important questions that we need to do around economics. We know that one of the things that we need to accelerate to implement the fossil fuel phase out is how do we overcome the economic fiscal dependency that we have on fossil fuels, particularly producing countries. So probably we will have a track discussing these economic enablers that we need, but we also recognize that we need cooperation and international cooperation and legal framework. Mm-hmm. So we are also expecting probably to have a track on that, but we are still figuring that out. And we are expecting to communicate that very soon, but we are still trying to figure that out because, as you can imagine, it's very, very difficult to choose things that we can discuss in the very limited time that can create an impact, that can move the implementation, that can give us viable pathways, but at the same time that are focused enough for us to have a productive conversation. So it's a balance that it's delicate and that we're trying to reach.
The next question was, what are the sectors who will be in dialogue before the conference?
Yes, so we are expecting to have dialogues from academic and science. We are expecting to have civil society, of course, having space and dialogues for providing, discussing and giving the inputs to the sessions. We are expecting for peoples to have a space. We know that Indigenous peoples, Afro-descendant peoples, local communities and frontline communities have a very, very important voice in here. So we are expecting at least one of those dialogues to be around peoples. We are expecting also and thinking about workers as well. And we are still figuring out, and I'm forgetting one that's very important, subnational governments as well, that have provided a lot of inputs and that have a lot of experiences that can help us surface those enabling pathways. We are expecting to, of course, support these dialogues as host country and as co-host country with the Netherlands, but we are imagining this something that can also be self-organized by the different sectors and that we can have like different leads helping us with this process. So we are imagining this as a collective effort as well.
Next question was, who will be there and should we be encouraging our government, for example, Australia, to attend? And just for your reference, at the moment, Australia is not intending to attend this conference, even though Chris Bowen is the president of negotiations for the next COP in Turkey. So I think he should be there and should be informed by what they discover in all their dialogues.
And yes, of course, that would be helpful. The declaration is still open for anyone who wants to join. So of course, the first country targets that we're thinking are the ones on the declaration, but we acknowledge that there might be other countries also in this coalition of the willing that want to come together and discuss those enabling pathways for the implementation of the fossil fuel phase out. So the declaration and the countries that signed the declaration are, of course, some of the first suspects to come to Colombia. But we also, as I mentioned, are looking beyond that. We are looking also on other initiatives, other coalitions. So I think that for you guys that are amazing advocates, that have amazing networks, I think that encouraging governments to come, of course, it's essential, but we need to be mindful that we want the governments here that actually want to work on the implementation of the fossil fuel phase to enable a good conversation. So Belém Declaration signatories, of course, but we're also thinking about our friends from the Beyond Oil and Gas Alliance, our friends from other initiatives that have put in place actions already and that are committed to the implementation of that fossil fuel phase out. And of course, there are non-proliferation treaty friends as well.
The last question is, what is the impact you hope to see?
We need to start moving from the narrative to the action, the legacy that we want to leave to this cause that we have worked, all of us together from different sides in different moments of our life. It's to go beyond the discussion whether we need the transition or we do not need the transition, towards the certainty that we need to implement the transition. So we want a coalition of the willing, working together on those enabling pathways to accelerate the fossil fuel phase out. And this is the outcome that we expect out of the conference. Of course, that translates into more specific elements. We expect this coalition of the willing working together in a second conference, because we acknowledge that we won't be able to cover everything and that there is further discussions, further coordination that is needed to implement and to advance those enabling pathways that we are expecting to surface out of these discussions. So a second conference is one of those things. But I would say that the most impactful result that I envision is a coalition of the willing working together towards the implementation and moving beyond the whether we need it or not, but moving towards the how are we going to do it and what do we need to do to make this viable and possible and fair.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Listening to the Climate Action Show and an edited version of the Belém to Santa Marta meeting. It's a discussion of the climate action community preparing for an historic meeting in Santa Marta, Colombia. The next speaker is Patricia Suarez. She represents the indigenous people of Colombia's Amazon region.
I want to greet you all from the 64 indigenous peoples that live in the Amazon region in Colombia. I believe that this space is very important for us. It complements and strengthens the vindication and the struggles that we have led for so many years. Now we are a new political actor that is adding to these spaces of decision-making regarding actions and decisions that influence our daily life in the Amazon region in Colombia. For us indigenous peoples, it's very important to participate from the starting point of the design of the conference to have results, to have political results and real actions, effective actions that give an answer to our realities in the territory. We are very concerned because sometimes we're seen as a civil society, but not as indigenous peoples. We don't want to lose the objective that is calling for this conference, which is the phasing out of fossil fuels, and specifically the expansion and the threats of fossil fuel exploitation in different territories in the world, specifically in our territory in the Amazon region that has been impacted for so many years for the exploitation and exploration of fossil fuels. In coming together to the conference, for the conference, as well as the governments that are going to participate, are going to contribute. Our territories cannot stand one more degradation, one more exploitation. Global warming is making people suffer the greatest impact in our territories. And these discussions are being held in places where the people who are making the decisions have never come to these territories. They have never seen the impact. So it's key for all of us to come together for this hoped for a just and fair transition. Whatever is done in one territory affects other territories and affects our home. And we need to bring this to the discussions because we are the ones who are suffering these affectations. And I think it's a moment where we need to bring together and look for the pathway together, because everyone that has been affected needs to be able to bring their input so that this proposal is solid and robust and can include the contribution of the different systems of knowledge. People who in this moment are living critical situations of human rights violations due to fossil fuel exploitation. I wanted to thank you and say that this is a unique opportunity. Without us, we cannot talk about elimination or phasing out of fossil fuels. Everything with us. And we want to say for the government of Colombia, to Daniela, please count with us and all of you count with us. Thank you so much.
Gajig Urujan, Gunderman. This is Stephen Pigram from up Broomway, Yauru country. And it's great to be down in Melbourne and you're listening to 3CR Community Radio. Been here for a long time. Where I belong.
Now we'll hear Tasneem Essop. She's the Executive Director of Climate Action International. She's speaking about the global justice movement and our path forward to a fast and fair fossil fuel phase-out.
Greetings to everybody. Let me firstly thank Daniela for her briefing and congratulate the government of Colombia for this, the leadership and the courage, actually, to take this initiative, take on a critical challenge of getting us to finally phase out of fossil fuels. As we all know, movements have been working to get to this kind of point for many, 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 many decades. And so, obviously, we see this as such a historic moment, an important building on work that has been done by movements for all of this time at national levels, at regional levels, at global levels. We believe, of course, that without tackling the key driver of a climate crisis that is becoming more and more devastating, impacting people across the world, we've just witnessed as we were sitting in the COP and after the COP, just the terrible devastation in Asia with climate impacts in the Middle East right now as well. And, this is just going to be the new normal. The fact that people's lives are being lost, people's livelihoods are being destroyed. And so certainly we cannot be in a position that we will have to constantly address these impacts without also very, very, very strongly dealing with the causes of the impacts themselves. And again, to remind everybody, of course, that those who are suffering the worst of the impacts are actually the least responsible for the climate crisis. And therefore, a very important part of phasing out of fossil fuels has to be justice and equity. And as the climate movement and movements more widely, we embarked on a campaign around the period of the COP in Dubai called the Global Fight to End Fossil Fuels. And it was a fantastic campaign, an escalation of a fight that brought together many, many movements, rights-based movements across the world, brought together those campaigns that are driven at a local and national, regional levels, and really pushed to get one of the first outcomes, actually, in this crazy UNFCCC process, for the first time ever, language that dealt with the transition away from fossil fuels in the COP in Dubai. So building from that, the outcome that Belém delivered, in fact, so we did not get the roadmap. I'm one of those that believe that it was not going to be possible because we did not do the work to get that roadmap and no strategy behind it. It all came as a sudden, announcement in the process itself. But certainly, when we use our collective power, we get results. And one of the important outcomes of BLM on the just transition is another basis from which, and foundation actually, from which we can also build on, and that this conference in Santa Marta should build on, because it's been far-reaching and quite comprehensive, and also will help support the kind of action-orientated, implementation-orientated conference that is being planned for by the Colombian government. So as civil society, we do stand ready. We are absolutely excited about using our collective power again to come behind the government of Colombia, all those who want to see a success out of this conference, to see the momentum built, and to in fact finally see implementation happen and see the acceleration, as you spoke about, Daniela. So in that spirit, I want to also say and share with everybody that CAN International, together with our sister network, the Campaign for Demand Climate Justice, DCJ, we have reached out to the government of Colombia to offer our support to help convene civil society globally, of course, bringing together national movements, local movements, regional movements across the world to be able to prepare for the summit and convene civil society in the broader sense to also look at, and it was good to hear already the kind of plans that you have for processes ahead of the conference, the dialogues that you're talking about. And so we also offer through this convening role to support the convening of a people's assembly. You might call it open dialogues. We would like to call it a people's assembly, where we have a very inclusive process to ensure that whoever does represent civil society, because I'm sure the numbers will matter, whoever represents civil society in the official processes, the high-level sessions in those discussions, actually take into the conference the voices of civil society, what we would want to see as the contributions towards ensuring the enablers that you talk about. Again, we stand ready to support this initiative. We will be already early in the new year convening civil society more broadly to look at the process, ensure that it is wide and inclusive. So this is an invitation also to organizations and networks who would like to be part of that preparatory processes and collective thinking for the conference itself and the People's Assembly, to please reach out to us at the conference itself. Thanks very much, and thanks again for the opportunity. We look forward to supporting the work of the government of Colombia and with all of the allies who are on the call right now as well. Thank you very much, Zipora.
My name is Daryl Best. I worked all my working career in coal mines. I am now passionate about a transition to renewables and about saving our planet. And you are listening to the Climate Action Radio Show on Community Radio. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
And lastly, Alex Rafalovich.
Thank you so much, Tasneem, and thank you all of you. It's been a really incredible hour. There have been more than 400 people on this call, which is far more than we were expecting or imagining when we were trying to pull it together. For those who don't know me, I'm Alex Rafalovich. I'm the executive director of the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty Initiative. And I think what we've heard in this hour is how important the Santa Marta conference moment is politically, that it is not only a procedural or process shift in how the world addresses fossil fuels, but it is a political shift in elevating the focus that we need on having international cooperation to make the phase out of fossil fuels faster, fairer, financed, feminist as well. Really deep appreciation for everything people on this call and beyond have done to build the political power that has got us to this moment. I'm going to wrap up and just say a couple of things very quickly. To reiterate, this conference is being hosted by Colombia and the Netherlands, and it is not a fossil fuel treaty conference, but as a network and as a network that has been campaigning for enhanced and complementary cooperation on the exit from fossil fuels, we see this as an incredibly important moment, and we will be making it 100% of our focus over the coming months as a network. And we encourage and will be wanting to work with all of you, if you're inside our network or beyond it, to activate in that sense. What can we actually do? So one, need to stay tuned, because there's obviously far more questions right now necessarily than we were able to get answers to in this call, but also maybe some of those answers aren't ready yet. Not only is the conference is not the fossil fuel treaty conference, the call for a fossil fuel treaty doesn't belong to any one organization. We are a network of more than 4,000 organizations. And so please, it's up to you to plan your own activities and ideas. There's no censorship checking of what's going on. You best know your context. You best know the power that you have. And we would love to call you into that power and make plans that you think will be impactful to take action. When you're doing that, try and join the broader discussions with others that are also taking action, so we can see how these distributed mobilizations and activations can connect and be united and have impact. We will be looking at supporting more conversations about what does in-country, kind of outside of Colombia, outside of Santa Marta, what does your activation and mobilization look like in terms of generating ideas and inputs to the conference, or generating activation and pressure on your governments to participate? We encourage you to put out communications welcoming the conference, talking about its importance, calling for international cooperation. There's still a lot to do for the world to know about this historic moment. And each of you probably has a microphone you can use, has an audience you can reach. And we definitely encourage you to think about integrating the importance of the Santa Marta conference into your end of year communications, into your looking forward to 2026 communications, to keep the momentum going.
If you or someone you care for is struggling with a mental illness or other disability and you need someone to talk to, you can call the Wellways Helpline. Wellways Helpline is a volunteer support and referral service that provides information to people experiencing mental health issues or other disabilities, as well as their family, friends and carers. We're here to talk if you are feeling socially isolated, seeking information about mental health or mental health services, or just need someone to talk to. As a peer-based service, everyone working at Wellways Helpline has a lived experience of mental health issues or disability. Wellways Helpline is a national service and operates Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., excluding public holidays. So if you're struggling yourself or are struggling to help someone else, please call Wellways Helpline on 1-300-111-500. That's 1-300-111-500. Wellways supports 3CR.
Now we'll hear parts of a new film. It's called Fighting, Not Drowning. It's about the countries like Vanuatu, who took a case to the International Court of Justice in the Netherlands. You'll hear the Honourable Ralph Regenvanu from Vanuatu and many other voices from Barbados, Tuvalu and Blue Ocean lawyers. As Philip Sands says in the film, a single line from the ICJ can be used in national courts around the world. It's all about making illegal the causes of climate change. And some countries are still profiting, some countries are still subsidizing, and we have to really get the law on our side. It's one tool. The film is available at the Fossil Fuel Treaty Initiative. So I hope after you've listened, you'll watch it and see the faces that go with these voices.
See, things can happen like this, and they have.
Tropical cyclone Lola is making its way towards Vanuatu, marking an early start to the season. Particularly,
there are now most items. the human race can get out of the mess that it's in and into a better place.
There is an urgent need for a collective response to climate change, grounded not in political convenience, but in international law. There are these readily identifiable group of states who are causing climate harm. What price are they going to pay for what they're doing? How are they going to be stopped?
We're actually asking this court to do, the judges of the World Court, we are simply asking them to apply international law to the conduct responsible for climate change.
Vanuatu is a nation of islands and island peoples. We look to the court for recognition that the conduct which has already caused immense harm to my people and so many others is unlawful, that it must cease, and that its consequences must be repaired.
In the International Court of Justice, oftentimes when you get to this level, an advisory opinion, it is mainly the big law firms that pitch to represent a country before the court.
It's a very tiny, I don't know, sequestered, elitist kind of thing where you build four walls and you keep everyone else out.
And knowing that, from the very beginning, we understood whoever stands for a country needs to be from that country. It needs to be about representation, not some fancy European or New York white male lawyer, let's be honest, but folks they have never seen before.
In the beginning of this process, you had no shortage of naysayers. It was clearly communicated to us that they believed that they had a prior claim to this space, that this space was really like a closed club, for lack of a better word, and that's not what it is. It's not what it's meant to be. It's not what it should be. International justice is something to which we are all entitled. We all should be here.
Because it's part of his culture was taken away through colonization, he's also trying to relearn and revitalize some of these cultural practices that are about taking care of their environment. And it's also at the same time being impacted by climate change. So they're trying to recover from colonization, and at the same time, it's being taken away.
Second wave or multiple waves of colonization.
Yeah.
Their entire sustenance is being destroyed by climate change, and it's due to too much heat or too much rain, completely unpredictable seasons.
Landslides that were caused by really severe cyclones destroyed all of the gardens. So the women have to hike down the mountain, across a ravine, up another mountain to garden. And then maybe only have an hour in the garden. And they're feeling so worried. So worried even some people are having strokes.
It's, I don't know, I think it's very important.
Yeah.
Like on the ground, in community, gathering these sort of stories and earning the trust. You know, to even receive stories, you have to be trusted enough to receive them, right?
It was hard for them to express what they were feeling, like empty walking around with a community that had to relocate. They said it was like losing a loved one, worse than death, worse than death.
And they were experiencing such a wide range of harms, and those harms are clearly human rights violations. And they needed to be translated as such to the court.
The most important question is a hidden question. That is a question between the two questions, the breach, because it goes to the core of the matter, which is that climate destruction is illegal. The World Court has been asked, what are the obligations of states to protect the climate system for present and future generations? And what are the legal consequences when states don't do what they're supposed to do?
We believe that the wide range of international legal rules have already been violated. It's happening in real time, and it triggers legal consequences. And I mean, opening the door to climate reparations.
Yeah.
This is really exceedingly concrete.
Yeah.
Even if all of the court is really doing is dispelling legal ambiguity, you know, that lack of authoritative legal clarity has been what has hindered our collective efforts to avert the climate catastrophe.
Typhoon Karen, Typhoon Pamela, Typhoon Paka, Typhoon Omar, Typhoon Hong Sanwa, my first major typhoon. I remember all of the glass sliding doors, all of the glass windows, all of that shattered. My mother stood this mattress up and then we all huddled behind it. And I remember being frozen in that moment. These extreme weather events are just going to get stronger. They're going to get more intense. It's beyond chilling to think about our small island, Guam. I'm trying to use the law to wrap my arms around what I most love and wish to protect.
We moved back to Papua New Guinea with my twins, who were two at the time. My daughter got sick, and this doctor that saw my daughter said she has dengue and malaria. There is an increase in recurrence, and it's because of climate change. And she's a tiny person, so it was a lot. When I came back from The Hague, that had been the longest time that I'd been away from my kids. And I explained to them what I'd been doing. And my daughter said something back to me like, did they say yes? Did they say this activity that's causing climate change is illegal? This matter-of-fact way, like, everything is dying. Like, of course they would say this is illegal.
There's nothing that will come out of COP that's going to say anything about
oceans.
For example, legal constructs exclude oceans.
Yeah, how does it tie in with the question before the court?
Good. If we are going to be talking about tackling climate change that affects everything, then law needs to also recognize that the entire corpus of international law should include.
Because climate change is a science, it's not a law, right?
Yeah.
So the law needs to grapple or be up to date.
Yes, grapple. I like that. Let's use that.
Grapple, be up to date with the science.
Yeah.
Interdisciplinary approaches such as science.
Yeah.
I will never forget the FOOS introduction. They were trying to construct a bridge from the Pacific to the Caribbean, but they couldn't do it.
Everything I did at that point heavily relied on the contacts of my father. My dad was the Attorney General in Trinidad and Tobago. He's passed away now. He had a lot of regional contacts. Everybody was like, ICGU, what is this about? Pacific. But some people, where's Vanuatu? We went on the agenda and they agreed.
We had slavery. We had colonization. They devastated us. They robbed us. And they became industrialized. They developed because of our hard work. Yet we know are in that same position again where we cannot develop because, once again, we're dying. We can't develop because we constantly have to use money for recovery. We're once again suffering literally because of their actions. So it's definitely colonization on repeat.
When I heard that, I was like, whoa, that was a heavy blow. And it makes sense what you say.
All of the bad things that are causing climate change are ultimately facilitated by states. And when it comes to fossil fuel subsidies, it's actual a direct contribution from the state itself to the problem.
They need to stop the fossil fuel industry, the greenhouse gas emissions, the destructive path of development they're on, to stop the harm, and then they need to repair the harm. A single line from the ICJ is something that can then be used in national courts around the world, all the way from municipal councils to Supreme Courts. This opinion will be used by anyone arguing for greater, more ambitious climate action.
The science is clear. Human activity is leading the planet to warm at unprecedented rates.
The Attorney General for the UK came and he began his statement like he was in our corner.
Faced the greatest impact on their territorial integrity, on their economy, on their culture and heritage.
He was giving some praise to the small island development states. And then he just started coming at us with the climate treaties.
The most constructive, the most concrete, and thus the most legally effective way is the climate change treaties.
We had to refute it and make it clear to the court that it's not just the Paris Agreement and the climate treaties.
The Paris Agreement also provides the answer to the second question. And I therefore invite the court to affirm the central role of the climate change treaties as a matter of fact.
Customary international law has always been part of the corpus of international law, and we wanted that clear.
Members of this honourable court, you have heard the scientific evidence, which is indisputable.
You have heard the impacts on my country, which are devastating. We were colonized by them. The British fought for St. Lucia 14 times. You can't be fighting us again right here. According to the states, human rights law and even customary international law do not contain existing or current obligations which ensure the protection of the climate system. This cannot be legally correct. So that was why we came with so much energy.
Way back in early 1990s, the world decided to see climate change as an issue that needs to be addressed. And that's the origins of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC.
We have been continually frustrated by the UNFCCC process that's gone on for over 30 years.
Along the way is the Kyoto Protocol, which tried to establish binding targets for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but failed to do so. And then, of course, Paris.
Paris held a promise, but the promise essentially hasn't really been kept. We just see that these emissions keep rising. So states put forth pledges that are absolutely not ambitious enough, mm-hmm. and also often don't even keep them. So it's not about ditching Paris, mm-hmm. it's about saving Paris.
Yeah. So basically, we have a problem, we need to address it, but no one's directly responsible for that problem, which we all know is a lie.
Yeah, I mean, but the UNFCCC and Paris and Kyoto, they have failed. They have not done the necessary. We have to recognize that it's failed. So what are judges to do in the face of an inability and an unwillingness of states to act?
We want them to go beyond, look at the entire corpus of the international law, the soft law, the cases, the treaty law, the human rights aspect of it. We want them to look at everything holistically. Not just pinpoint what suits you. Don't use it as a shield. Don't hide behind it.
Australia contends that the UNFCCC and the Paris Agreement are the standards.
Germany submits that the Paris Agreement and the UNFCCC.
China also hopes that the court will uphold the UN climate change negotiations mechanism.
This is the only viable route to effectively address the climate change crisis.
There's so much white noise. There's so much dabbling in the dark art of wordplay. It's like a kind of legal mischief. And it has to stop because the human race needs to effectively address the climate crisis.
Certain states say the problem's too hard, it's too abstract, it's abstract people and abstract impacts on these people caused by abstract beings. And that's just
respectful.
So irritating.
It's about Pacific Islanders, but it's also about the developing world. Especially in countries in Africa who have not had this opportunity yet.
I think it's so significant that the legal team that has led this effort has been based in the Pacific, a region that is already reeling from the adverse effects of climate change, everything from sea level rise to ocean acidification. And so there's this sense of urgency, like that you can't reproduce if you don't really experience it yourself.
It was the students from the Pacific that started this process because they also could see what was happening and understood what the stakes are.
I think, you know, coming from Pacific Islands, you have a lot of communal living. Everything is about community, nothing is about the individual.
We have done what we set out to do. We have taken the world's biggest problem to the world's highest court.
It was possible because like-minded people, young people around the world, first of all, and civil societies and the United Nations General Assembly states unanimously supporting this. This is the international community coming together, and this is how it should be.
I always think about that saying that said, like, oh, I need to be a voice for the voiceless. It's like, no, they have a voice. Just let them be the voice.
And the court cannot take into account differences in financial economic power. And so that was the first time ever. It's over 30 years of UNFCCC process to be actually on an equal standing with a voice that's equally heard.
So the first half of that day, we had Vanuatu, then we had the Bahamas, we had Antigua and Barbuda and Barbados, who came very prepared, very strong, and very impactful. This thing, it's like the gathering of the stories and the presenting them. The Solomon Islands, New Caledonia, Kanaki, Papua New Guinea, Vanuatu, Fiji. There's something like a sacred duty. It is our work to discharge this duty. And it's our work to bring it to these judges.
It needs a collective action, not just one person to make a change. Everyone equally contribute to that change.
You watched the judges, and when the young boys came up to speak, every judge lifted their heads and focused on her.
We saw this tiny person standing in front of the judges, but I was standing on the shoulders of giants. I felt that I was telling them what they need to hear, and not what me, Cynthia, want them to hear, but what everyone wants them to hear. So in that moment, I felt the power shifted to me.
The peoples of Melanesia live exceptionally close to the earth, and thus feel the vandalism visited upon it acutely. Moreover, theirs represents living, breathing, alternative imaginations. Imaginations other than the one that has brought this planet to the brink of ecological collapse.
I'm a Pacific person. I understand through my own personal history loss of culture. And I do talk about it as climate dispossession because I actually think that what's happening is it's a form of violence.
They have to literally show all of themselves, even the things that are sacred to them, just to show the world, like, yeah, that they deserve to live. Like, why? You know, is it not enough that you can see what's happening to them? But apparently that's not enough.
We took this journey for a long time. Now it's before you. We've handed over the task that we've carried for a long time. And now it's before you. We are looking to you with the hope that you'll be the leaders we need.
Thank you to the Fossil Fuel Treaty Initiative. The Santa Marta Conference in April will be an opportunity to look at what is feasible. A treaty is one way, an ICJ ruling to make continued fossil fuel extraction illegal, economic levers. There's a lot going on now between now and April in various universities, conferences and dialogues everywhere about getting ready to meet at this conference and find what is feasible for a simple roadmap away from the extreme overuse and increased use of fossil fuels. I hope Australia is represented at Santa Marta in April. Maybe you could send Chris Bowen a message asking him to be there or to make sure there's a delegation. He should know he's the appointed of COP31 for the next COP. He's going to be the president of negotiations. So I think he should be informed about what the Phase Out of Fossil Fuel Conference really has to say. The voices you heard today were from a seminar and a film, both of them produced by the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty Initiative. Some of them were Daniela Duran Gonzalez from Colombia, Patricia Suarez from the Amazon, Tasneem Esop from South Africa, Ralph Reganvanu from Vanuatu, and many, many more. In the Amazon COP in Belém last November, Australia and many others signed the Belém Declaration, which should get us a little bit over the line into committing about the fossil fuel phase-out. Our climate minister, Chris Bowen, was given a pivotal role as president of negotiations leading up to the next United Nations Climate Conference in Turkey. After Santa Marta in April, there will be a Pacific conference to follow up the leads that we find out about there and to start on the implementation and feedback into the United Nations process. I think this is interesting, this idea of the United Nations doing their big conferences, but outside that, these regional and bottom-up kind of actors being consulted and formulating a roadmap that will push that big United Nations conference to much brighter and bigger action. So please, listeners, keep up the pressure on your own MPs to maybe attend this conference or certainly to promote its findings. And please get involved with climate action groups wherever you are for this historic push to manage the phase out of fossil fuel dependence. My name is Vivian Langford. Goodbye and good luck.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared. It's coal. It's coal.
Tune in every Monday at 5 p.m. to hear the Climate Action Radio Show.
canta compañero, que no calle tu canción. Si te falta bastimento, tienes ese corazón. Canta, canta compañero, canta, canta compañero.